thunder, 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 thunder. Oh!
What are you looking at, nerd? Huh?
Thunder nerds,
thunder nerds,
thunder nerds.
Get those nerds!
Boom. Welcome to Thunder Nerds. I'm Brian Hinton.
I'm Janelle Pizarro.
And I'm Frederick Philip Von Weiss. And thank you for consuming the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do.
And do tech good.
Ah, boom. We're just back from lunch.
Yeah. Brad burgers, and they were fantastic. We actually had lunch with Tim Smith, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And we're here at the Front End Conference. It's the 10th year. It's
10th year anniversary.
Yeah, St. Pete, Florida. Yeah, woo, at the Palladium. Really nice facilities here. And we're here with, who are we here with, Frederick?
We're here with Ron Edelin.
This guy.
Yeah, this guy. How's it going, Ron?
It's fantastic. I grew up in Florida, so coming back down here from Charlotte is
warmer.
It's great. Yeah, the weather is much warmer. But yeah, so excited to be here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when was the last time you were back in the old Florida?
Actually, quite often. I've got family here still, and I travel to St. Augustine a lot. So I would say February. And then, of course, we took the kids to Disney over spring break. So
sure.
Yeah. Charlotte's not a bad drive, or it's a quick flight. So it's not.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Not like the West Coast or anything.
Yeah. 12 hours or so to here?
To here I flew, but okay. To like St. Augustine,
that's pretty close. Like,
it's a lot easier. Yeah, it's just northern side of Florida.
That's cool. So, for our audience, if you could tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, I am, I guess, officially my title is creative director at a digital agency in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. So pretty much my background is in more of the marketing and advertising side of web development, design, digital UX strategy. Mm-hmm. I started my career in Los Angeles as a motion graphic designer. Did a lot of Flash.
Maybe director.
But After Effects, a lot of stuff. Yeah. DVD authoring. Kind of found my way to the web. Over the years.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So exactly what are you're going to be speaking about today?
It depends like the timing of when this will be heard.
Now. Yeah.
It's happening, right? Got the privilege to talk about the UX of virtual and augmented reality, which it really is just kind of a designer's perspective on virtual experiences and how to approach it, how to design for it, how to maybe retool the way that you think about designing for a space that literally has an endless frame.
Like the holodeck.
Are you Ready Player One kind of thing?
Well, how did it go?
I think it went good. I mean, typically when I do these talks, I pick a topic that is a personal hobby per se than something that would take up the majority of my work day. So I would say 80% of my time is, design development for what standard screens, desktop, mobile, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And then occasionally we'll get the opportunity to work with projects that are more immersive, augmented, mixed reality. And so, it becomes more of the thing I stay up all night to do and research and study and work on, kind of passion point, because you can only do so many responsive layouts to where you want to.
So
what's the new stuff?
What made you passionate about this?
Well, I mean, it really comes from the core. Again, my background, traditionally trained graphic designer. Then I went into the broadcast motion design industry, learned a lot about narrative, storytelling, animation. Bringing a design sensibility to that world. And then, of course, dovetailing into the web and the internet and how interactivity plays a role, just the whole concept of being a user strategist or user experience. So it's like this whole mesh of all the fields of graphic design. And when you talk about virtual environments, or at least just environments where they're more immersive, augmented reality included, for me, it's kind of a big hybrid mesh of storytelling, story experience, which comes from that broadcast side, as well as accessibility, great user strategy. So this, and I strongly believe that there's a big part of our future, right? These more immersive environments. And so a lot of it is just fulfilling my desire to kind of bounce around the different disciplines of design, but also hopefully enable me to keep a job in the future. it just kind of checks all the boxes of my passion.
So what was the talk about exactly?
Like, so it was really broken down the three paradigms of, or what I believe the three paradigm shifts in user experience design. One would be, redo the talk right
now. In 5 minutes, go.
Yeah. Learning. So designers need to learn to design for environments. So for physical spaces, not just flat 2D screens. The second one is become a behavior architect. So instead of information architecture,
I like that.
You know, be socially conscious about when you are designing experience for users in these more immersive environments. Even augmented reality, say, for example, the Alexa, where you can, you know, nowadays you can speak to your home.
Do this.
Right? Make me a sandwich.
Make me a sandwich, Alexa.
What does that mean? And what kind of behaviors are you designing? And what habits are you forming on behalf of the user? And so just kind of being conscious about that, because I think it's much more potent in these more immersive environments than it is on, I didn't get through my shopping cart or something, right? Yeah. So it is more experiential. So that's the second thing. Be more mindful of the behaviors that you're evoking and creating. And then the third one, you're quizzing me. I have to be, be a schematic designer. So meaning, don't scheme or try to fool or trick you, but.
Think about flow.
Think about creating maps and diagrams around how people might use it, or even.
The journey.
But spatially. It's kind of like you're designing the floor plan for your home, but you're doing it for the experience. And so make that a part of your wireframing, make that a part of your process.
I like that.
In what way are users that are using augmented reality and virtual reality different than just your typical everyday web user?
So it just it depends on a lot of different contexts. So I think the more real example now in augmented reality is, for me, just that example of Alexa. So, for example, my mother, who is in retirement age, she got an Alexa for Christmas. And so it is really a behavioral and form factor change in our everyday lives. So when she calls her son, me, she's sitting on the couch and she says, "Call Ron." And, of course, Alexa hears that. Alexa, hey, call Alexa. Ron.
Okay, Google.
Or Google or whatever you're sorry, we're promoting one brand here.
I'm just trying to set on people's things.
Be inclusive. Does that work?
Sometimes.
Anyways, long story short, she doesn't have to reach over and pick up a phone and dial a number and hold it to her face, right? This is a subtle example of augmented reality, but that thing that we would normally do physically has been removed from our process, right?
Yeah.
We don't necessarily need to worry about that action, that physical action anymore. It's just, "Hey, Alexa, call Ron." It calls me, it blasts my voice over the speaker, and then she can have a conversation without moving a muscle other than her voice. Mm-hmm. So that really is the profound difference, to answer your question. And I think as we start to layer more and more and more of these aids, if you will, augmented or virtual, we're going to, what I believe, become, users are going to become really more dependent upon them. We're going to create these very real dependencies, just as we are so dependent on our phones, that the reliance on these systems will become even more apparent.
Yeah, one could argue that it's not, the experience is different. The overall user experience isn't different, but the behavior and the actions you take to perform the task that you would want to accomplish. But do you have any of this AR, VR, Alexa, you name it, in your life, and how do you interact with yourself?
Well, it's we were just huddling, talking after the talk. My wife and I are currently in this debate of whether or not we should buy one. We don't.
You don't have any?
And not in the home. And it's actually been a debate. We have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And it ponders the question of what privacy. Is it like, well, not only that, but what is it like to grow up in a house that you can talk to, right? Yeah. So a lot of this stuff didn't exist when we were kids.
Yeah.
So it is more of a, just being, again, kind of conscious of, do you set protocols or family rules around how you might use this thing and when to use it? And
there's actually a new Alexa that's kid oriented where you can actually control and limit
what
can access and what your child can do on it. How long it's active.
It's kind of like the same amount of time you allow your child to watch a screen.
Right.
Like you can think of it that way too.
But I mean, it's also a profound benefit. So like if I want to know, what the name of this insect is that's sitting on the kitchen sink, you just ask and you get the information right away. Where else, having to pick up a phone and call, if I would have to stop, go get an encyclopedia or log on and look it up, I'm less likely to do that and therefore less likely to provide the child that information.
I'm really curious how they'll change. They've done studies about how the brain is changing based on Google and searching and how people aren't learning straight up the material, but they're learning how to access the material in a different way so that their mind, instead of thinking like when there's a problem or something that they don't understand, their brain, the way their brain works is it's actually thinking, okay, how do I find this in Google? Like, how will it change when it's not opening up a browser or, swiping down to do search and it's going to be yelling out loud and be like, hey!
It's funny, we had a guest on, I don't know how long ago, but he was talking about how his kid always says to find out what time it is. He just, yells out like, Alexa, what time it is?
Right.
And they were in the grocery store one day and just randomly his just son just says, Alexa, what time is it?
Yeah.
And he's like, Daddy.
That's kind of funny. You know?
That's weird. I grew up in the 90s. And so I grew up with Disney Channel original movies.
Yeah.
So there was this movie called Smart House.
Okay.
It was essentially like this guy wins a house for his family, right, over the radio. And the house comes equipped with something like Alexa. And this is in the 90s, right? Like that concept isn't really necessarily a thing, right? And so this house can make sandwiches for you. It can, tell you what time it is. It can tell you, can give you the perfect temperature for your room that is perfect for you, everything, right?
Right.
And this house becomes so addicted to this family that it completely controls their life and then completely shuts them into the house where they're not allowed to.
It's a Simpsons episode.
Yeah,
there's a Simpsons episode?
Yeah, the Halloween special. Yeah.
It's very frightening. So I can definitely see where that can be like, there's great positive to it. Your life becomes better. You're definitely learning a lot more as a child because you have access to literally the world of information. But also, very terrifying, right?
Yeah.
So totally get that.
I wonder what kind of things we need to look at as far as developing our skills for the future for this.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and in the talk, there was a lot of reference points to what you can do now. Downloading some sketch files that Google's providing around best practices and tips for designing screens within virtual spaces. So there's a lot of, and I would say arguably within just the last year, a lot of new practices, best practices, protocols coming out there. In other words, forming a common language for everybody to get around to design for these environments, because there just hasn't been. It's kind of been the Wild West. And that's a large part of the presentation. It's about sort of aggregating all of this stuff and saying, okay, here's what's happening. Here's the common languages that I think are really powerful and how we can sort of get around it. So there's a lot of answers to that, but I think the long story short is there are tools out there now. There are things that are starting to become more universally accepted. One point example, if you're a designer that you're designing your style system and your font size is based on pixels. So my headline is 32 pixels high and my subheadline is 12.
Yeah, and the translation is going to be very different.
Well, how do you translate that into a spatial scale, right? Yeah. And so, Google at their conference last year, the I/O conference, their Dreamcast team had come up with this new measurement called DMM, which is a distance distance per millimeter measurement. So it instead of 12 point size, you do 12 dmm, and it's a relative scale that your font stays the size that is the designer intends it, regardless of where it is placed within deck. Oh. So because it's all perceptual, it's like if I put my this paper here, I see the font size, and as a designer, that's what I've crafted. I want it to be that size. But if I move it back, you know, there's nothing written. If I move it back, then that font will be smaller,
right?
Or closer, it's huge. And so, how do you have that common language between designer and developer, or the UX strategist and developer, and that's what's happening right now in the current marketplace.
Wow, you seem very passionate about this. How does this translate with your as far as your family? What does your family think about your passion for this? Like, are they involved in it? Is your
not at all? No, my wife.
Does your wife listen to you? It's like, okay, yes, dear. Or do you?
I'll run some ideas by her. Yeah. She said, yeah, you're a nerd or whatever.
And, well, your kids.
I will say, my daughter is very much. She's a very bubbly. She's 4 years old, and she's very much.
I'm pretty excited about this stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, she's kind of real life, and life is a big deal to her, and she's just very. My son, though, is very, very into it. You know, he's...
How old is he?
He's 7. Okay. And so he's getting into, like, video games just now. And so he's starting to... Yeah, is that too early? I'm going to get slapped on the hand here.
No.
You know, so... I'm not saying that because it's more... You know, boys are more drawn to it versus girls. I don't think that's the case. I just think that their personalities...
Well, he's older, too.
And he's a little bit older. So, you know, I'm able to experience... shared an experience with her that he was able to dive underwater because he's into sharks and through VR swim with the sharks.
Oh, wow.
And you know, you can just see him scared? He's just like you know, and that's so cute. Those moments are really cool and something that when I was a kid I never, you know, was able to swim with a shark.
Are you sad about that?
And that's pretty cool, but you have to, it kind of like with Alexa, you have to kind of be mindful of it, socially conscious of it, that you don't just give them a headset and sort of make it an experience and talk about it.
And guide them and limit it and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, limit it to some degree, but like share it with them.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Talk about it.
And make it more personal as an interaction between you, not like, here, go do this, and I'm gonna go program on my computer.
Yeah, I'll be back in 20 minutes.
It's not, which what, you know, a lot of parents do. Here's the TV, you go, you know, it's you treat these environments the same way.
Are you thinking about maybe doing a talk on that as well? Because, I mean, it seems like you're really into, you know, doing that too, right? Like
how to be a parent in a new world.
Yeah.
Technology and parenting.
Yeah, I think that, like, that, I feel like...
Yeah, that's a huge topic.
Yeah, technology and parenting and humanist doesn't really ever get displayed. And I think that would be an amazing topic to do a whole talk on. Would be like, hey, this is how I'm experiencing VR as a professional, but this is how my children experience it, like, how I'm living this life.
I think I've thought of it, to be honest, and I think I need a little bit more R&D years with my kids to kind of, you know, here's the failures, here's the success, here's what you should do and not do. But I think it's scary. I mean, it's just as our parents, you know, would have said, exposing us to, I'm going to date myself here, but TV or, you know, any new technology that takes you away from the real world or maybe that real learning environment.
Stop watching an MTV, Ron.
Yeah. Don't watch, actually, The Simpsons. My mom had a big problem with me watching that. But, you know, I think every generation has that thing to get over. Yeah.
So what is you said South Carolina is where you're
at? Charlotte, North Carolina.
North Carolina. So what's it like up there? Do you do the parks a lot, go hiking?
Oh, it's beautiful in Charlotte. Yeah, I recommend it. The outdoors is great. They have two lakes, like Norman Lake Wiley, that are beautiful places to do. And yes, I do actively hike. I love to run.
I love the Blue Ridge Park right there.
Blue Ridge. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that's about 2 hours up to Asheville in the mountains.
Yeah, I've been to Asheville a few times. I've never been to Charlotte. Yeah. I heard there's really good, like, really good food and music. Just
it's,
really nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool scene. There. Yeah.
I love Asheville.
Yeah.
Asheville is very very much like St. Pete in a lot of ways to me. Like, in the,
I'll agree with you there, except the weather.
Yeah, and the fact that mountains. I love mountains.
mountain snow. Don't get that here. It's flat and hot.
Yeah.
I mean, I go to the beach and there's white stuff all over the ground.
Right,
what are you talking about?
It's a little different.
Yeah. You know, every place has its pros and cons too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree with that.
Excellent. Well, so, any other questions you have?
Oh, no. I mean, on a whole, how'd you like your experience here at the conference?
Oh, that's great. I've spoken here before.
When was
what year?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. It's probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Oh, okay, cool.
What was your talk?
Yeah, what did you speak about?
It was on...
responsive design. Everybody, it's like a progressive. He keeps growing, whatever the new tech is.
No, I mentioned this in my talk. Last time I spoke here, I was
tables
preceding Ethan or after him, who's the father of responsive design. And,
yeah.
There was a tweet that came after my talk. It was like, Ron's the antithesis of Ethan, in terms of, because I'm all about these immersive environments that are rich and very blown out, and Ethan's about simplicity and making them more accessible. And that's what I spend most of my day doing is building responsive sites. But I do like to kind of ponder the future. But the last talk was on it was basically motion prototyping.
Cool.
So it was using a workflow that utilizes After Effects to do enhanced animated prototypes for mobile websites, for mobile and web. So it was basically prototyping things that would result in a bloated JavaScript or a lot of interesting solutions. But it was how could we really, more so, was how could we use animation as a meaningful and usable tool to enhance the experience,
and
what can we do to explore that?
Delight the user.
Yeah, I mean, not, delight, but...
you don't want to delight the user?
Yeah.
You don't want to delight the user, guys.
Yes, but, meaningfully.
Yeah, I know. I get what you're saying.
Meaningfully
delight.
That makes a good title for a talk. That could be the next one.
A blog post.
Yeah.
Meaningful delights.
Meaningful delights, yeah.
Sounds like could be like candy, meaningful delights.
I've had that today. Yeah. Ooh, Turkish delights.
This is a new Turkish delights. Yeah. They're different.
Well, it's great having you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for doing your talk and coming down to St. Pete and enjoying our weather here. Nice and warm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. It's really nice.
Yeah, super. And where could, if people want to get a hold of you, find out more about you, where can they do that?
Yeah, it's my name, ronedelin.com.
Okay.
EDELEN.com. And you've got some work up there, and I'll try to get the presentation up on the blog there as well.
Great.
I have time to breathe and
so 10 minutes.
Out, so yeah.
All right, everybody, look for that in 10 minutes. Thank you so much, Vaughn.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Thunder Nerds. Please follow us on Twitter at ThunderNerdsHo, on Facebook at facebook.com/ThunderNerds. Go to thundernerds.io for our website and find links to our YouTube channel and Instagram from there. Please send us any ideas or comments to connect@thundernerds.io. And if you would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/ThunderNerds or send us an email if you'd like to sponsor the show. Lastly, please remember to go to iTunes to give us a like or review. We honestly and sincerely appreciate it.
I like romance novels. They have happy endings.
I should have known the Territor didn't mean us any harm when the Sword of Omens didn't obey me. And anyway, it was just plain stupid to assume it might be bad. Just what the fuck am I talking about?